Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM. It's time now for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
Looming over Washington these days is a $500 million farm bill that contains vital conservation funds. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Under House measure, $1.3 billion would be slashed from the Conservation Reserve Program and the Conservation Stewardship Program. And the Isaac Walton League of America has made the farm bill a top priority this year. In our studio is Joan Kirby. She is president of the Isaac Walton League of America Midshore Chapter, and also Calvin Yell, who's the Secretary Treasurer of the Midshore Chapter. And, well, first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you much for the invitation.
Well, let me just let's start with this farm bill and the idea that maybe conservation money could be at issue here. How important are funds like that to conserve the area in terms of nature and the environment?
The funds are extremely important, and we're looking at I think a real problem here with the Tea Party. Nobody wants to commit the money necessary to continue programs that have proved successful with the existing farm bill. And we're vitally concerned that if this bill is allowed to expire, we then will be reverting back to a program that was established in 1940 and guidelines for agricultural activities that were pertinent at that time. Here we are 50 years later, or 60 years later, and the agricultural industry is significantly different than it was at that time. We really need to get this bill through. We need to get the dollars committed that will allow us to continue with conservation as we know it today. If we don't, we really are doing a disservice to the country.
How do you see agriculture having changed? I mean, we're talking about this new law that was back then. How has it changed in terms of trying to deal with conservation on the shore?
Well, before, it was a family farm in the 1940s. Agricultural practices were significantly different. The volume of land that was in production was significantly less. Today, by comparison, it has become an industry. We're talking about plowing to the roadside, which we did not do in the 40s. We used to have buffers, which have been eliminated. Today, since the buffer elimination, we're confronted with runoff, significant runoff, not only of the soil itself into our streams, but of many pesticides and nutrients that have been added to the soil to produce higher crop yields. So we need to look at all of these activities, how they impact the environment, and how they result in less conservation activity that it would be important to be strengthened and continued into the future.
How do you rate the farmers, for instance? Because I know that the farmers have, there's a lot of now nutrient management programs going on. There's a lot of talk and a lot of very close inspection of what happens to, say, chicken manure, that kind of thing. Are farmers making some real progress?
I think to a great extent, yes, they are making the commitments that are necessary. There are, however, certain items regarding the conservation reserves that some would like to eliminate or reduce. I think it is, especially from Isaac Walton League's point of view, we have enough land in production. We don't need more farming in terms of volume of activity. We really need to ensure that we have a conservation program that conserves land. And for example, the pothole regions of the Midwest, if we start taking these marginal lands, converting them into productive, into farmland, we have farmland that is less valuable, less productive, And we at the same time are making a significant impact on wildlife, particularly migratory ducks. And we need to ensure that we have adequate funding that we can continue to conserve these marginal areas so that we do not lose the wildlife that we otherwise have.
Now, one of the other issues is obviously has been development itself. I mean, we've seen a tremendous growth. And as a matter of fact, when I first got here about 10 years ago, people were talking about these huge tracts of homes. I mean, there was, Hebron was talking about, and I guess still talking about something 1,600 or something like that, or over 1,600 or so housing, individual housing units. They were talking about doing that, say, for instance, in near Snow Hill. Some of that has now fallen off, obviously. But well, how significant is this development issue, Joan?
Well, in the trap area, that was also the case. They have a wonderful planned community to trap, and the sign keeps changing, coming soon. Well, it was coming in 2011 and then 12 and 13, and now it just says coming soon. So I think money is the big issue. There's already housing that is unsold, and to put more houses on the market, there's no guarantee to the investor that they're going to be sold. So that may help in the long run that the it stops or at least tapers off, and the new developments that, that were planned aren't forthcoming.
What do you think might happen if indeed, I mean, eventually people expect the housing development or bust to turn around? We're already seeing some of that going on in other parts of the area. I mean, do you think we may be back in 5 or 10 years, the same place that we say we were safe, say, 5 or 6 years ago?
Well, that's certainly possible.
Yeah.
I really can't predict it, but it is possible. I don't see it coming in any
right.
area close by to me so far. Most things are on hold. The new hospital mm-hmm. is on hold in Easton, so that you could see a lot of kind of a wait-and-see approach to new building and new construction.
How would either of you rate what local government has been doing? I mean, because there's a lot of, particularly as I watch cover some of the debates in some of the county councils and county commissions, there is this tension being on the one hand between people wanting to have expand, that is developments, for example, on one hand. On the other hand, there are other folks say, no, wait a minute, we want things to stay the way they were. I mean, how would you rate how the counties and the cities have dealt with this? Either one.
It's a tough issue. I see things in the paper that our councils are dealing with this. It's a very serious issue. It's hard to know which way to go. You have so many people lobbying for their own position in it. I think you just have to take it one development at a time. I know there's been a lot of controversy over expanding where Target is in the Easton area. There was plans to put apartments and condos and they're holding off on that. I think we just have to wait and see what happens.
Kelvin, what do you think?
I think the local government, at least in Talbot County, has done a pretty good job of looking at the potential impact of non-point source pollution from agriculture. And they have implemented some laws regarding buffer zones. Whether or not they've done an adequate size buffer is another issue and subject to a lot of debate. I think right now it's something like 60 feet back mm-hmm. from any water line. That's meaningful. Probably could be done better or done more of that type of thing. As regards suburban development or urbanization, it's going to happen. I think that the important thing is to find mechanisms for controlling where it occurs and at what density it occurs so that we're not losing a lot of farmland or creating strip cities or strip malls up and down the highway. It means there has to be some mechanism for trading off parcels of land or the use of parcels of land so that it does not impact a particular individual.
Well, one of the things that's occurred, and there's a debate here, is about the idea of having these sort of isolated developments out in the hinterlands, away from the city. You know, these small sort of clusters of developments, cluster developments, I guess that's what they call them, complete with a small private wastewater treatment facility or some process that's sort of more like a septic system, although they deal with this, with the waste. Is that a danger, do you think, to the land that we have out here? I mean, because there's a lot of talk about, well, gee, you could have, as you mentioned a moment ago, you could have a whole bunch of clusters, small little developments up and down, which would certainly take land away from farming, to say nothing about just open land. Yeah, either one.
It's one approach is to develop clusters rather than mm-hmm. allowing, say, the farmers to sell off frontage lots. Probably better. Because that way you can have the opportunity to put in septic systems, a central septic system, or a small municipal processing facility. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I think you have to look at the overall impact of these kinds of developments, that they create more traffic on the highways. They create more air pollution. They create their own point source runoff. I think we ought to try to find more ways of centralized development.
Because there's a lot of talk, you know, there's some resistance certainly by the farmers who say, look, you know, we want to be able to sell our land for development if we so want. Some of it has to do with being able to borrow money, because if it's not open to development, the actual value of the land actually drops. And at the end of farmer's life, he says, well, gee, I want to retire, and I want to be able to sell this land for as much as I can. What do you say to a farmer who says, gee, I want to go ahead and sell off and you know, retire or get a loan to keep me going in terms of the potential for development on these farmlands? I mean, there's this incentive for farmers to do it. What do you think? Joan?
Well, the farmer has certainly the right to do that. We have to consider, though, what selling that land off means. In the case in Trapp, one of the big drawbacks and the stumbling blocks to a new development is the waste treatment plant. And it's millions to increase a plant that just serves a town of Trapp of about 800 people, to add now 2,100 new homes. And so the farmer does have to realize what the impact of that is going to be. And I really don't have mm-hmm. a solution to that. And the farmer doesn't either. We'll just hope that things will work out for everybody concerned. And I agree with Calvin that I think our council has, our folks have really tried to be fair and even-handed in how they're dealing with these issues. And so I sympathize with them with the issues that they're facing. It's not easy.
I want to wait before we get to talk to some other things. I want to find out how you individually got involved with the league, and what, I mean, is this a lifelong passion that brought you to what you're doing? And let me start with you, Joan. What did you start out as a young conservationist, or what? How did that work out?
No way. I got involved, I would say, late in life. I happened to marry someone who was born and raised in Trapp, and since we wanted to get married and he was not going to move across the Bay Bridge, I moved to Easton, where he was living, and he was a farmer, and he was in the farm and fertilizer and farm supply business. And so I got interested in it there. He was a member of the Isaac Walton League, and I joined. And I'm convinced that the environment is everybody's issue. It is not just folks in Isaac Walton League or the Chesapeake Bay Foundation or Riverkeepers. every single person in this country really needs to have the conservation and make it second nature to all Americans. So I got involved in Isaac Walton, and since then my husband has passed away, but I've kept my involvement, and this year I just became their new president. So it's a great organization, and I'll let Calvin talk about how he got involved, and then I'll tell you a little about the organization.
Okay. Before you came here, before you became involved with the league, what was your attitude towards conservation? Do you remember? Or did you think about it much?
I did. I used to live in New Jersey, and they had curb recycling in 1984 when I was living there. And when I came here, I was surprised, almost 5 years later, that there was nothing like that here. But we took everything to the dump, is what we called it. And I was very shocked that they hadn't made more progress in the state of Maryland compared to where I had lived previously. So that was kind of an eye-opener for me.
So, and then did you get out into the countryside? I mean, did you see the rivers and that sort of thing? Was that inspiring to you?
Yes, we lived on the Peach Blossom Creek.
Oh, okay.
So we saw Cook's Hope built, and we could see the impact of that to the creek. And so, yeah.
Calvin, what about you? Did you wake up one day and become a conservationist, or have you been all of your life? How did you get involved?
I can't say that I have been a conservationist all of my life. I've had an interest in the environmental issues going all the way back to when I took a master's degree in environmental systems management. Never had the opportunity to use it career-wise, but it's always been an issue with me that we are conservationists, that we are environmentalists, that we protect our natural resources. And having retired to the Eastern area, I was invited by a friend to join, and that's been about 10 years ago now, and I've gotten very actively involved in the local chapter, and am pretty much involved in the recycling activities and conservation activities that we do carry on within the chapter itself.
When you go out, you obviously see the land, and a lot of it still has lots of trees. And I mean, in addition to just simply the farmland, Calvin, how does that impress you? What do you think when you're out there?
I would like to spend more time out there. I'd like to have the opportunity to do more hunting and fishing. I love the outdoors, and like to commune with nature, so to speak. I think we have such a variety of opportunities to also to enjoy the outdoors, enjoy the environment that we have here on the shore. It's a great place to live.
Now, did you move here?
Yes.
And where did you move from?
I moved from Bethesda, Maryland.
Okay. Well,
that other shore.
The other shore. Me too.
Me too? I mean, and it must have been pretty dramatic change then to go from Bethesda,
changed. Even Bethesda itself, I remember it as having dirt roads and farmland very close by. Today, it's all paved over. Significantly different. I wouldn't want to live there today. I like the pace of life here on the shore.
A bit slower. That's true. That's true. I lived in Washington for a little while. So, are you fearful that what happened to Bethesda could wind up happening here, or you think we're a long way from that?
I don't think it'll happen in my lifetime for sure.
Not mine.
Nor
either.
Yours no. either, probably. But you know, I'm sure that 50 years from now, it's going to be an issue. It's going to have to be dealt with in some manner. You know, as the population increases, towns have to expand to accommodate the populace. It's there.
John, what about you?
Can I tell you a little bit about our organization?
Sure. Let me do that, too. Well, let me ask you, though, first, and then we'll get to that. But when you go out into the wild, I mean, you said that you live on the riverbank. What What impresses you about the area?
The geese.
The geese, yeah.
The migratory birds. We used to sit in our river room, we called it, and watch all of the wildlife. You could see the otters. We had some otters in the creek, and all kinds of birds, the mute swans. They would come up in our yard and bring their little goslings, and we would feed them corn, and they would just have a wonderful time. And my husband even built them a little pool for the little ones to swim in, and they were just wonderful to watch. I love the waterfront. I spend as much time as I can on the waterfront, either on the ocean or the Gulf or our creeks here. It's a beautiful, beautiful place to live.
So tell me then a little bit about what your organization is doing, and what, you know, what kind of activities that they...
Well, we have three major functions, and one of them is litter patrol, and I'm part of that. We patrol part of the Oxford Road and Moneymake Road, where our nature area is, and we recycle aluminum and newspaper. And Calvin can tell you a little more about that. He's our recycling guru.
Mm-hmm.
And our organization, the main organization, has 40,000 plus people in it nationwide. And there are 250 chapters, and we are one of 15 on the in Maryland. And we have 75 members. Mm-hmm. And they range from students to our oldest member, will be 93 next month, and he is still very active. And he has built us, in fact, 271 birdhouses to sell at $15 a piece to go into our scholarship program. And so any age is welcome, and all we ask is that you work with us and help out in our projects. Everybody is a volunteer. There are no salaries. It's all hard work from the individual members. And we changed our name in January of this year from the Talbot County chapter to the Midshore chapter to better describe the area that we serve, Talbot, Queen Anne, Dorchester, and Caroline counties.
Let me ask Isaac Walton, who was he? What's the history?
Isaac Walton was a 17th century author of a book called The Complete Fisherman. The Complete Angler.
Angler, okay, right.
Complete Angler. And complete is spelled E-A-T, not the way we normally spell it. And it is still one of the best books written on fishing. And they named... the Isaac Walton League was started in 1922, but they named it after this 17th century author because that was his focus, protecting and saving the environment mainly for fishing and the wildlife habitat. That was his focus, and that's why they thought it was important to call it that. Our chapter has only been in existence since 1949. But it is done a lot in that time. We also, our third focus is on scholarships. And we have given at least over $100,000 in scholarships. They go to usually three high school seniors who are going to further their education in environmental studies, and one to a graduate student at Horn Point. And we hope to continue to do this. And Calvin can talk to you about our recycling program because that's where most of the money comes to support these scholarships.
Well, Calvin, what about that? Tell me a little bit about recycling
efforts. Let me say, I do not consider myself the guru of recycling.
the club does, though.
if anyone is, it's one of one member who's been there longer than I have, for sure, and that's John Morris. And John, I think, has been very instrumental in setting up the newspaper and aluminum recycling programs. Today, we bring in about $1,000 a month from our recycling efforts, which occur in Easton and in St. Michael's. The idea originally was, shall we say, in line with the League's objectives of conservation. The idea was, if we can take these items, that is newspaper and aluminum cans, out of the landfills, we don't need as much landfill space. And that was the origination of the idea. And then after we found out that you can, in fact, make money recycling, we instituted the scholarship program as a use of those funds. In addition to using it for scholarships, it also helps us maintain our nature area facility, which is in Trap. That happens to be where we have a pavilion to hold events. We have 55 acres there. We have walking trails throughout. We have an archery range. We have a kayak launch area. And we promote the use of the facility for our functions as well as private functions that might want to use it. Particularly, we've been using it with other environmental groups and with the Boy Scouts, local chapters of that.
And they've had campouts there.
Oh, yeah?
It's really a great place for them.
And in addition to when we talk about recycling, another facet of that has been, we think that it's a good idea to get away from plastic and paper bags.
Paper? Well, why getting away from paper?
Well, paper costs trees.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Okay?
Many.
And trees have a real advantage of being there in terms of what the impact that they have on the environment. As regards to plastics, we've had two times now where we have promoted the idea of switching from one to the from that to recyclable, reusable bags. In fact, I brought you a couple just for your use or to pass on to members of your staff.
All right.
And the whole idea and the message that we put on this bag is says it's just say no to plastic. Mm-hmm. Plastic is a real problem. It does not disintegrate. It could take 1,000 years for a plastic bag to totally disintegrate. And they create a problem with landfills in terms of taking up space. They're an eyesore. You see them hung up in trees along the roadside.
And they're hazard to wildlife, too.
They're hazard to wildlife. You find them in the waterways. So anything we can do to cut down on the use of plastic, I think, is a great idea.
We gave
these away, stood out in front of Giant, and I've been to Food Lion, and I've been to Acme, and I put out a 50 or 100 of them and say, please take one or two. Please change your habits. Use recyclable totes. And so I think we're trying to get a catch on with it.
And we're going to be at the Traptoberfest on October 5th, and mm-hmm. we're going to be handing them out. And we're going to be at Waterfowl the second weekend in November and doing the same thing. Isaac Walton League will have a booth at both places. And the nature area that Calvin was talking about, that's where we have our dinner meetings. We have 8 a year, and they're either on Sunday at 1 o'clock or Thursday nights at 5:30, and we always have great speakers. We had Mark Scanlon from Pickering Creek on the restoration of Blackwater Refuge, and we've had wind energy folks from the state of Maryland talking to us. So we don't just have fun and have dinner, but it's an educational event as well, and we invite anyone to be a member to go to our website. It's iwla.org/mid-shore.
Okay.
And
we'll get that on our website.
And they can
too.
Get their all information about us and about joining us.
We've been speaking with Joan Kirby. She is president of the Isaac Walton League of America Midshore Chapter. Also, it's Secretary Treasurer at Calvin Yell, and talking about obviously conservation, the league itself, and how we're doing, and all that sort of thing here on the Eastern Shore. Conservation, obviously, one of the key issues that that will be facing us, I'm sure, for a long time. Well, I thank you both for coming by.
We thank you for having
thank
us.
You for having us.
And you've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.
Delmarva Today is a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Don Rush is the host. Chris Rank is the executive producer and audio engineer. You can listen to this program again on our website, delmarvapublicradio.net. You can also view our program on PAC-14 television and on demand. Visit PAC-14.org for full details and schedules.